Here's a question for you. What does the flesh-footed shearwater have in common with nuclear science? Well, one's a bird and one isn't. That's a start. It turns out both have a part to play in a study that examines the effect of plastics on our oceans, our marine life, ultimately on us. Now, the Dutch tall ship, the Yukon, just finished making a trip from Hobart to Sydney. It's enabled researchers on board to study the impact of plastics on the marine life, like the flesh-footed shearwater. To explain how nuclear science has a part to play in all this, we're joined by Professor Richard Bernardi. He works at both the Faculty of Health Sciences at Sydney University and at ANSTO, the Australian Nuclear Science and Technology Organisation. Professor Bernardi, welcome.
Good evening, Jonathan.
Now, your trip involved studying the flesh-footed shearwater to determine the impact of plastic on their health. What do we know about that impact?
Well, in recent years, the work that our colleague Jennifer Lavers at Monash University and at the University of Tasmania has been doing, going back almost 10 years, has shown that this relatively abundant species is declining in number. And the question has been, why is that the case? And what one has realized is that there's an increasing number of plastic parts found in the stomach of shearwater chicks. Mm-hmm. In particular, they are sort of green and blue, and quite obviously the parents mistake that for prey and then feed it to their young. So that's one obvious reason why a population may suffer ill health effects. But we've been looking into other aspects of degrading plastics in the oceans.
I think this is where it gets truly fascinating, because most of us think about plastics in the ocean, we think about rubbish floating about, but it's this it's on many levels and in many sizes. We're talking about very small particles, are we not?
Yeah, that's correct. So I'm not talking, and that's where the nuclear techniques come in that ANSTO uses. I'm not talking about the litter that we can see. I'm talking about the breakdown products. And just to illustrate what breakdown means, if you had a piece of material, plastic the size of a sugar cube, and it falls into pieces with a nanometer length, well below what we can still see, then the surface increases dramatically, roughly the size of a football field. And plastics have a property which allows them to absorb, for example, heavy metals, mercury, lead, cadmium. So unlike a material that has a decay and then has a half-life, plastics, when they degrade, can toxify. They become more toxic. So now these very small particles enter the food chain, and the shearwater is an interesting species, first of all, because it's not completely rare, but also not super abundant. And like humans, it's at the tip, at the apex of the food pyramid. So what it eats or what its prey eats is gradually accumulated. And then you have what is called a bioaccumulation or biomagnification effect. So we may sort of initially think the solution to pollution is dilution, the big ocean. But over time, what is highly diluted becomes more and more concentrated and then finally ends up in the top predator or somewhere lower down in the food web. And if it's a crucial part of the food web, then it can destabilize a whole population, and then effects can be quite catastrophic. And that's where these sort of semi-abundant species are ideal to study, because they're not completely rare. Mm-hmm. And if there were sort of 10-15% changes, then it already indicates very significant disturbance in the larger system.
And how ubiquitous is these sort of microscopic particles of plastic in seawater?
I think one can quite categorically say there is not any area in the oceans, even in the deep trenches, Mariana trenches, where plastics have not been found. So the likelihood of finding visible plastic, just the whole volume of the ocean, is not very high. And then if you do find, that means there is a huge amount of plastic. As I said, we are primarily interested in the plastic that can't be seen. and where we need the nuclear techniques to find these very small trace amounts, because we basically can count individual atoms, and plastics, depending on what their use has been and how they have degraded, have an atomic or elemental signature.
Is this specific types of plastic? I mean, we tend to favour plastics which biodegrade. Would we be better off having plastics which stain in lumps?
I think you're putting your finger on an interesting issue. We have currently two competing concepts. One is recycling, and that implies the material has to be stable enough to be recycled. At the same time, we have introduced increased degradability, and biodegradability just means it's degradable in the environment. It doesn't mean it's innocuous. Now, we have two competing philosophies, and depending on what degrades in the environment, it is indeed detrimental. There is a distinction to compostable material. Compostable material decays or degrades into harmless materials in principle, and I'm saying in principle, because the conditions under which the composting can, in fact, occurs are not that trivial to achieve either. So whatever we do, we have to be very mindful that at least we reduce the use of single-use items, throwaway items. And then if we do use plastics, that we value them as the important materials that they are, and maybe go back to greater durability rather than degradability.
Professor, thanks so much. That's salutary. At least there's something we might do about what appears to be an extraordinary problem. Professor Richard Bernardi works at the Sydney University and at ANSTO, and looking at plastics and marine life. 11 away from 7.